This is Intercom Episode 3, Andrew Taylor Still University at Kirksville. Hello and welcome to the Osteopod. In this episode, we will interview Andrew McCarr, a third-year medical student from A.T. Still University, or ATSU, in Kirksville, Missouri. Andrew is currently undertaking a fellowship in medical education at ATSU, and he is a student ambassador for his school. Before we get into the interview, let's go over a few quick facts about ATSU at Kirksville, Missouri. ATSU is the first osteopathic medical school, which opened up in 1892 by A.T. Still himself. Not only does the program offer a historic background into osteopathic medicine, but has integrated its curriculum with newfound technology, especially emphasizing in ultrasound. The school also boasts high passing rates for its Level 1 exam, as well as Level 2. The average MCAT score for an incoming student is 503. The average incoming GPA as well is a 3.6. And on that note, let's head into the interview with Andrew, where he introduces himself, where he's from, and why he chose to go to DO school and medical school in general.
I'm Andrew McCarr. I'm an OMS3 who is in the process of completing an academic fellowship with a concentration in medical education. I'm from Chicago, so I've lived there my whole life. And I've been especially inclined to medicine ever since I went on a mission trip to Kenya 7 years ago. Yeah, it really changed my life. Like some of the scenes that I saw there, it was really heartbreaking. And I hope to give back to them, but not just to them. I also hope to give back to my own community. And so that's kind of what drove me to medicine. My siblings are also both DO students as well. And they're the ones who actually introduced me to the tenets of osteopathy. So once I learned those tenets, I realized that osteopathic medicine in particular was my calling, and I applied exclusively to osteopathic schools.
So why did you choose to go to ATSU in specific?
ATSU in specific because, well, there are a variety of reasons, but among which it was the first DO school. You know, there's a lot of history with that. And the first graduating class from 1892, they've been established for more than 100 years. There's a lot of history behind it. And then in addition to that, they're still up with the times with an ultrasound curriculum. In fact, they were the first osteopathic school to incorporate ultrasound into their curriculum. And so with such a new science, you know, being put into place and such excellent teaching of that science, I figured that it would add to my repertoire of things I would have before rotations and, of course, before residency. And I figured it would be a good reason to go there, you know. And in addition to that, it's also the same school my siblings go to. Convenient for the parents because they could come see all three of us. So it worked out really well.
What is the town of Kirksville like?
Well, Kirksville, just to give a little bit of a history, it's been around for around 175 years. So it's been around for a while. And our school's been around for about 125 of those years. So there's like a good 50-year difference between them. And so there's a bit of an antique taste to Kirksville. Some of the buildings have been around for almost a century. And so there's a lot of history behind those buildings. And they even have some of the buildings that A.T. Still either lived in or taught in, or, you know, if one of his sons lived there, they have some of those. So it has a very nice, authentically antique type of flavor. And I think the town really prides itself with that. So they really, they all keep that antique taste. Because the city's been around for a long time, they hold on to their history and take pride in it. And so a lot of their buildings, when you come here, you can tell that time has touched those buildings, which is for the better, honestly, because it makes you feel as if you're actually sitting in school 24/7, as opposed to just out and about in a city or whatever. Like you feel like you're more grounded and focused when you're in that kind of environment. And the thing is, the population in Kirksville is about 20,000 people. And so, if you're moving from a big city, there is quite a transition that you have to make. So I've actually had to make quite a transition too, but it's very nice. I enjoy Kirksville, and I'm really happy that I came here. And I think there's a really nice feel to the town as well. Everybody, like all the townspeople, they'll look at the students and they kind of take pride in the students. Like if they ever see the ATSU logo on there, oh, you're from the medical school. Oh, and they get very sweet and intimate and nice with you, and I really appreciate that. So,
Tell us more about the campus itself. Is there anything that's missing from the campus, and what do you like about it?
for the campus, what I would say is they do a good job of holding on to the history, as we've mentioned, but they also do a good job of renovating. So, for instance, what they've done is they will build a building so close to the old building that there's an internal pathway that you can walk through the building to get to the next one. And I think that's really cool. Because of the harsh winters of Kirksville, it makes it a lot easier to go from building to building without having to put a jacket on or whatever the case is, and you still feel warm and toasty. So that's really cool. They also renovated a newer building for where the library is and where the ultrasound lab is and whatnot. So that was all made within the last 10, 15 years. Although parts of it, really have its history and are really, they're really old, the rest of it is pretty new. And it would be the surprise of everybody who goes there that, like, wow, there's actually a lot more new things there than old things. And I don't know, it's really nice. It's a beautiful campus. I would say maybe the one thing that is kind of off is that the anatomy lab building, it's a building and it's really far away. Not like really far away, but it's about like a 3 minute walk, 4 minute walk, which in Kirksville is pretty far because if everything is close by, relatively speaking, that's a far walk. And so if that was closer, I mean, I think that would be maybe a little bit nicer. But that building was also around for quite a while. And that's actually where some of the classes used to be offered a couple, like in 40, 50 years ago, used to be held in that building. So they try to make use of what has been around for a while and maybe change its utility and save costs that way and save money that way, and eventually ends up being in the best interest of the school. So I think that that's really smart. Like they're very frugal, and I think that works to their advantage.
What was interview day like?
The interview day was pretty memorable because there was like a half hour to 45 minute presentation that was given by one of the staff members from the admissions department. And she described like the unique aspects about the school. Like she highlighted the ultrasound curriculum. She highlighted features about the school that kind of set it apart from other schools. So I thought that was pretty cool because I don't think some of the other schools I went to, they didn't quite have just a sit-down presentation of here's what makes the school special. But then they were essentially saying you could use these to your advantage in the interview because it shows you paid attention. So that was really good. And some of the information they gave you would not have been able to find on the internet. So it really does show who was listening and who wasn't. And after that presentation, we basically all were given four interview blocks, where three of them were half-hour interviews, and one of them was a like kind of like we're gonna measure the size of your white coat on you, and then the rest of the time was spent, just touring the museum. Like the rest of that half hour, you could tour the Osteopathic Museum. It's a little bit smaller of a room. It's not that big, and so it's doable. It's not that big of a museum, so you'd be able to look at it within that rest of that half hour. The three interviews, each interview was provided by a different member of the college. So one would be by a clinician, another one would be by a basic science professor, and then the third one was from one of the directors or staff members within admissions. And so I think they were each trying to gain a different perspective of who you were as a person, and trying to see if you if we fit the mission of the school appropriately and whatnot. And yeah, afterwards we had a nice lunch. from Jimmy John's, and we received a tour of the campus by the ambassadors of the school. They're student ambassadors, so they'll show us. They showed us all around the anatomy building and the main campus and whatnot, and it was really nice. I really enjoyed the interview day.
What are the housing opportunities and cost of living like in Kirksville?
So I would say, so there are on-campus and off-campus housing options available. The on-campus ones are in the form of dorms, as you mentioned. They basically entail a kitchen, a living room, a bedroom, and a bathroom. Just kind of one of everything. But you are not allowed to have a roommate unless they are a significant other. And then off-campus housing, of course, is available. And as I mentioned earlier, because the medical students kind of are what the town is built around, a lot of the landlords really want to have medical students in their apartments because we have good reputations of keeping the apartments clean and tidy, not really partying too much within the house anyways. And so we would be the best tenants. And so what ends up happening is they will try to advertise through the school. Students a lot of times will hear about them through the school and will contact the landlord and see, like, get a feel of the price and whatnot of their apartments. And the apartments can range from a one-story, like a one-story apartment to even like mine, which is like a two-story apartment. I have a three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath apartment. It's two stories. And I'm paying about $550 a month for me and my roommate. My roommate is my brother in that regard. But I think housing in general here is just about that same pricing. There isn't anything that's much more expensive to the point where it's difficult to live by. And with the amount of money that's offered by the government for your loans, like cost of living isn't really that expensive. Like I would say, even like with the addition of utilities and food and all of the above, I maybe pay around $7,500 a year.
What is the curriculum like the first 2 years of med school?
Sure. So I would say the curriculum at this school is primarily system-based. However, first semester is kind of a little bit different because that's kind of where a majority of it is basic science courses. That you don't really get introduced to any of the clinical courses at that point, but they provide a solid foundation for the future material to build on it. The subsequent three semesters are system-based. That's when they have a lot more clinical science classes, such as internal medicine, surgery, pediatrics. So they'll have a lot more, and even pathology they actually include there. So they have a lot more clinical science classes in there, but then they still touch on, you know, here's physiology, here's pharmacology, the more basic sciences, but they'll only teach with whatever pertains to that system. They do a good job of, if something applies to multiple systems, they will call it out each time it applies to that different system. So I think it's kind of like a spiral curriculum in that way. Like not purely a spiral curriculum, but close enough to it that it kind of acts like it. And a lot of the material that was taught during first semester ends up being touched on during the system-based portion of the curriculum as well. Because I think that the clinical aspect really provides good context for the basic sciences to be applied in. Yeah, they do a really good job of incorporating the clinical sciences with the basic sciences with this curriculum.
What does the typical day and week look like at Kirksville?
A typical day in medical school here is on average about 6 1-hour lectures per day, which begin at 8 a.m. and end at around 3 p.m. And like at our school in particular, we have about 2 hours dedicated each Tuesday and Thursday for osteopathic manipulative medicine, so OMM. During first year, it's from 8 to 10 a.m., and second year, it's from 10 to 12 p.m. So everybody can't wait till they get to second year. During first year, we would also have cadaver anatomy labs. So we have, you know, cadavers that are provided by the state and some other organizations. And so we use those to dissect them during our first year. And they could take anywhere between 2 to 4 hours. Also at our school, we'll have histology labs, which would last 1 to 2 hours, or ultrasound lab, which lasts about an hour each. So there are different types of labs that we have, but they don't usually have labs on labs on labs each day. It happens every once in a while, but not usually. Usually it's like one lab per day, maybe two, and usually they're separate. The school does a good job of that. Usually no more than 5, 6 hours in class per day. So,
How are lectures given at your school?
well, yes, lectures were traditional. However, they were not required unless they were indicated that they were required, which not many of them were, but some of them were. Most of them, though, were recorded. All of them were recorded except, I think, for ultrasound for whatever reason. I don't really have a reason for it, but all of them were recorded and put to Echo 360, which is basically it's a lecture capture program. These were uploaded to Canvas, which is like a learning management system software, kind of like Blackboard. If you're in, I'm assuming some of your audience, if they're in college, they're probably familiar with Blackboard or Canvas. It's basically, just another one of those. Textbooks for courses were required, but for most classes, the notes provided by the professors did more than suffice. And in fact, I would say it would be better to just read from their PowerPoints, because they did a good job of bringing each textbook into it, as opposed to just having you read one textbook and just the information from that textbook is going to be enough. Like, no, they took the good parts of each one and put it in one place for you. So I feel like everybody universally decided we're just going to learn from the PowerPoints, and I think that did the trick. So, and we also have some classes provide iBooks, like the book a book that the professor writes that's about the lecture, and it provides more information than what was in the PowerPoint. And typically they will test from the iBook if they provide an iBook. So that's probably good to know. And some of the details that were in the iBook are maybe outside of the scope of certain textbooks, but they would still be kind of within board range of questions. So I definitely would look through those iBooks.
How do you feel like osteopathic manipulation or OMT was taught at your school?
That's a good question. I think, though, the answer would be different per student here. However, I've always been interested in osteopathic manipulation, so I would invest a little bit more time outside of class to learn it. But I say the school did a really good job providing the foundation to build on to become competent within the osteopathic world with manipulation. And I would say I'm confident in my skills. I would not say that I would treat anybody and everybody, but I would definitely treat when it's indicated, and I wouldn't hesitate to do it. And I think they did a good job of showing you what contexts you should use it in versus what context you shouldn't. The only thing is, so being the original school, they emphasized it maybe a little bit more than they should have. Of 50, only 10 to 15% of DOs use osteopathic manipulation outside of medical school, and so they become saddened by that, and they want to find a way to engage the students and make them love it. But I think they should maybe approach that a little bit differently. But if the student is already inherently enjoying osteopathic manipulation, this school does a really good job of adding water to it and allowing that to flourish a little bit more. But yeah, just kind of the whole putting the seed in and whatnot, that maybe is something that the school could improve a little bit on. I think that once people like actually understand the theory behind it, then they can at least appreciate what's going on. They may or may not be 100% with it, but they will still know when to use it and when not to use it, and that is the most important thing.
Are there any special curriculum tracks, programs, or fellowships offered at your school?
My school is one of the few schools, as you mentioned, that yours is another one, that provides a pre-doctoral academic fellowship opportunity to students who successfully complete their first 2 years of medical school. But there are three different types of fellowships. One is anatomy, two is medical education, and three is osteopathic manipulation. Each of these allow the student to receive exposure to their discipline and allow students to delve deeper into their topics of interest. Also allows for research opportunities to take place within their interests. And these last for 1 year, during which the student takes on more of a teaching assistant role for first and second years in their topic of interest. And at the end of the fellowship, the student resumes medical school career with their third year of medical school, like their third year rotations and whatnot. And then there are some other programs too, but I was going to mention there's, since your audience is, some of them are include some pre-medical students, I would like to mention that there's a track called Still Scholars, which is an early acceptance program, but there are certain credentials that must be met in order to be eligible for it. And if there's any way I could provide the website for it, and maybe you could send it to your viewers, that would be pretty cool. And I don't think you need to be at a certain institution to qualify. I think it's any U.S. accredited undergraduate institution could qualify for that. Kind of another track that can be taken. And actually also another thing that just came to my mind too, within the fellowship, there is a track that they call Still Leading Scholars, but that's only within the fellowship. And it's basically it's like a leadership meeting once a month, and it helps you to gain insight into what type of a leader you are. They use DISC profiles, a program that shows you if you like what kind of leadership style you have. Are you like a dominant type? Are you, you know, maybe more intuitive, that and more about your leadership style? And I think that was pretty cool. And they incorporate, you know, how do you interact with other such leaders? And so it really helps you to get to know, like one day, like as a physician, you know, if I'm leading other people, what type of people are they? Well, how can I appeal to those people? How do I make sure I don't step on their toes? And it keeps you cognizant of who's in front of you and how could you like get to their better side.
Are there any other research opportunities offered at your school?
So actually, yes, there are many opportunities for research. I haven't had the chance to mention this yet, but we also have a Master's of Biomedical Sciences program offered at our school. And so they also, they're definitely encouraged to do research. So oftentimes, professors are eager for those students and some of the medical students to come join their lab and have them help, especially if they're interested in that topic. And it can range anywhere from like biochemistry to physiology to pharmacology. Any of the basic sciences are eager for that. And even it could be as clinical as ultrasound. Like we have some ultrasound research opportunities that are open to any level of medical student to come and help with, because since you receive ultrasound education through the school, they are certain that you're able to help with that sort of research. And it's pretty cool. So it's nice that our school provides opportunities to do either of which or both.
What is third and fourth year like at your school, and where can you rotate?
Okay, well, third and fourth year, you know, we have rotation sites that students try to choose from, such as Bayonne, New Jersey, Phoenix, Arizona, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Temple, Texas, Salt Lake City, Utah, Provo, Utah. Like there's a ton of different sites around the nation that we get to choose from. There's more than just the list I just said, but some of these required rotations that we have during third year, we have to do family medicine, internal medicine, surgery, psychiatry, and obstetrics. So for us, third year entails that we complete all the required rotations that we have. And then fourth year is essentially all electives, aside from I think one or two selectives that we have. Selectives are basically a couple options that our school provides that we could do rotations in, like if it's anesthesiology and radiology or whatever the case is, we could go and try to fulfill a rotation in that through the site, even though it's not required for us to, because we wouldn't have to take a shelf exam for it.
What kind of shelf exams do you take?
We take co-mats per required rotation, and I think they amount to six of them.
When do you take level two?
Like around March or maybe April is when they would prefer for us to take level one, level two, sorry, level two, step two. But I mean, you could do it even a little bit earlier than that if you finished your shelf exams by that time. Our school prefers that we finish all of our shelf exams before taking level two, but they don't necessarily require it. So it's not the end of the world if you take level two before you finish your shelf exams, but you are required to eventually pass all the shelf exams.
How well do you feel prepared to take your board exams?
I feel pretty good because I mean, if we're talking about how the school did, I think the school did a pretty good job. They did what they could with trying to guide us with board resources. The thing is, they provide certain resources for free when I wish that they provided other resources for free as opposed to those. But they are still they still do a good job of promoting other resources despite not necessarily having purchased them for the students. And so in that regard, I'm actually very happy with the school because you know, they recommend the world a lot of times to students who are interested in either USMLE or COMLEX. ComQuest is also really good, and they've mentioned it. They won't really recommend it because they're like, well, CommBank, you know, does effectively the same thing as ComQuest. So I understand that. We receive both CommBank and Kaplan for free, but they recommend us using CommBank and UWorld for board preparation. So I think that's pretty reasonable and pretty fair, especially now that I've passed level one, COMLEX level one. I could tell that they did a good job of choosing what resources to promote, and so I'm very happy with that. And actually, the class that most recently took COMLEX level one, which was my former class of 2021, they had a first time pass rate of almost 98%.
Does your school have clubs?
Yes, we have all sorts of clubs. Some of the clubs are political, which are like, we actually have an AMA club. We have SOMA. We have MAOPS. I don't know if your school has the equivalent of MAOPS, but basically, it's like Missouri's Osteopathic Physicians and Surgeon Society. So we have that sort of thing going on where they kind of rally for the osteopathic physicians of the state. And so we have some of that. We also have some clubs that are specialty driven, which are family medicine, internal medicine, radiology, ultrasound. We even have an ultrasound club, you know? Who would have known?
Nice. Yeah.
So, and some are religious, like we have the, you know, the Islamic Student Association. We have Christian Medical and Dental Association, the Catholic Medical and Dental Association, Secular Society, Scientology Society, Atheist Society. Like, we have tons of different clubs. And we even have a Genders and Sexualities Alliances Club to try to appeal to people who have different sexual orientations. So we have a variety of different types of clubs, and surely people will be interested in multiple different clubs if they came here. So it's pretty cool. I enjoy interacting with the students in quite a setting because I feel like it's really rare for students to kind of get a break, and I think that is a really good way to spend time with other students, talking about interests that they have in common. So
Are there programs offered for mental health as well as support groups for spouses, family, children, that kind of thing?
There actually is. We have so there's actually a club for the spouses of medical students, where they kind of meet like once a month, and oftentimes they'll like prepare food for the medical students. And it's kind of, you know, they do it in like the common area. They call it the commons, the area that like where everyone eats is the common. So they'll have tons of different foods made. So that's pretty cool. Mental health, we have two social workers who basically help counsel students who are going through a tough time with mental health. We also have a lot of initiatives with regards to like Stillwell, which is basically trying to keep all the students athletic and running and active and whatnot, and involved in sports or involved in activities on in our campus gym, really a campus gym. And so it's pretty cool over there that they do a good job of doing that. We have like fitness testing twice a year to make sure that we're still in shape. And you know, if you wanted to have certain goals you wanted to achieve with regards to how high you can jump or how far you could push that thingamabobber, I don't even know what it's called, that whole like leg reach test thing. There's all sorts of things that you could try to get tested in with the physical fitness, and they use those as initiatives to, you know, try to improve student mental health. There are also like kayaking, golfing activities that our school will do in the state park that's close by here. And so essentially they find a way to collaborate with them to allow the students to partake in events in order to make sure they're not too deep into schoolwork. So I think that's pretty cool. There's tons of, and there's intramural sports as well. We have basketball, we have volleyball, we have soccer, we have football, we have all sorts of different sports that allow people to have fun with each other, as opposed to just sitting down in front of a computer and trying to absorb notes and going crazy from the amount of information. So I think the school does a good job of checking up on their students in that way. They do a really good job of making sure that people, you know, are being checked up on. And even if there's someone who they may find is a little bit, you know, maybe going through a tough time, they will reach out to the student. It's not like someone else needed to tell them. It's like, no, the social worker themselves will reach out directly to that student and have them set an appointment with them and talk to them and make sure that they know that they're loved and cared for. And I think that's really awesome by the school.
Are there any challenges or improvements that could be made at your school?
Challenges that the school's facing, there's none that I'm aware of right now. I mean, maybe with regards to or like technology and whatnot, like sure, like there's always room to improve with that, right? But in terms of education and whatnot, like I mean, yeah, there are always a little bit of hurdles, but I wouldn't call them challenges per se. It's just things that should eventually be addressed. And if there's anything that should be improved about the school, it's I think certain practices that the school has done help them thrive in, you know, previous years. And I think there should be maybe a little bit of tweaking done from year to year. And I think that to some degree, the school's mindset is if it's not broken, don't fix it. And so that essentially makes students feel that the faculty just want to take advantage of a well-oiled machine, as opposed to try to assure that, as opposed to trying to ensure that they're making it better or getting a newer, well-oiled machine or whatever the case is. They're kind of set in their ways with certain things, and it could be to the benefit of students or it could be to the disadvantage of students. I guess we'll never really know, but that's kind of one of the things that I've noticed. And I think that they have still been pretty receptive to student feedback. So each semester they offer a survey at the end of like after our final exam. So we have cumulative final exams at our school. They're per semester, cumulative for the semester. After those final exams, they ask us to fill a required survey about each course and what did we like and what did we not like about each course. And basically, they will convene for each semester and basically take the criticisms or whatever of the students and try to see if they have already been implemented, if they could be implemented, or, you know, like, would it make things better or worse? Like, they really take time to consider the possibilities of changing certain things as long as it was written respectfully. So if something was maybe slightly disrespectful or unprofessional, they would disregard it, but they do a good job of taking constructive criticism and trying to work with it. So I think that's definitely a pro about the school. And I think if the school continues to do that, I think they can position themselves to be in even better spot in the future than they already are now. So I like, that's the thing. I'm just really happy I'm here, and I feel like the community, like the school, has done a good job of making sure that each student is heard, and if they speak respectfully and are honest about how to make things better, then they will take it into consideration. And I've done, even me on a personal level, I've done or tried championing some sort of causes, and the school has taken them. Like, even with regards to, I can give an example, right? So basically, for us, we would have to, if we want to appeal a test question, we'd have to write them down, like physically write them down, like the actual question number and what the question was, and then write down, our rebuttal and whatever the case is. And I thought it was kind of a little bit of an outdated practice. And I thought, well, board exams, I just took a board exam. I'm pretty sure that we should try to have these comments embedded within the question on the computer. And so I professionally wrote to the associate dean of curriculum, like, hey, we should probably try to change this practice because this could only make things better. And so she looked into it and realized, maybe I'm onto something. And now, if you came to the school and you were a student here, if you wanted to appeal a question, you'd find it embedded within the question. And I think that's great. So they actually considered what I was saying, and they didn't just throw it off to the side. We've been doing it this way for so many years, and like, you're coming in telling us what to do. Like, they didn't take it that way. They were just like, no, that's not a bad idea, and everybody loves this new system, and thank you so much for giving us this idea and whatnot. And I'm like, anytime. So I'm really happy that the school is like that, because I think that's more characteristic of new schools than old schools. And for this being so founded and so, like, such an established school, for them to still consider the constructive criticism of students, I think is a really, really good thing.
Any final thoughts on your school, as well as any final pieces of advice for interviewing pre-meds?
So I would say that, I mean, I've kind of touched on these, but I'll kind of revisit them, that, there's a very rich history to the school. Fact that, AT still, like, established the school such a long time ago, but the practices have really trickled down from generation to generation within the school. And its ultrasound curriculum that, it's been around now for, I think, around 10 years. And we have 25 ultrasound machines, and God bless them. They're really, really, they do a good job of teaching ultrasound. Like, they do a really good job. And its osteopathic museum, which I've mentioned, it's actually the only osteopathic museum in the world. Those are only some of the things that really make this school special. But all of these, coupled with the genuine kindness of classmates and townspeople, really, like, make the school one of a kind. And with regards to advice to a prospective medical student, what I would say is just don't give up. Don't let anyone tell you you can't make it to medical school. I was the student who was told several times by people along the road, oh, there's no way you can make it. You don't have the stats, or oh, there's no way you can make it, you don't have the personality. Whatever the case is, they would say you couldn't do it, and it only challenged me to try harder and work harder. And I would say, for any prospective student, they should do the same. They should not back down. They should always try their hardest, and try to push themselves to be better. And even if it's with a low MCAT or a low GPA, it's still possible. You just have to try to better yourself and try to find what your weaknesses are and try to turn them into strengths. And that's essentially what I would say.
And that was Andrew McCarr, a third-year medical student and medical education fellow at ATSU in Kirksville. He provided some really good insight into what ATSU is like and some really good information and advice for future medical students. So once again, I appreciate all that he's done, and he is also willing to answer any of your questions. about ATSU, and so I will include his email in the show notes below. Feel free to email him if you have any further questions. If you have any suggestions or comments for me and about the show, The Osteopod, you can reach out to me personally at theosteopod@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter as well. And with that, thank you for listening to this episode, and I'll catch you on the next one.